You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 16th, 2022. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we think the FBI taking Mike Pillow's phone is hilarious and not worse than 10 Solyndras and 19 Benghazis, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. It's maybe even 9/11. I don't know. I don't know what to go that high. I don't know what the scale is, but taking Mike Lindell's phone in the parking lot of a Hardee's is the end of democracy as we know it, Blue Gal.
Well, criminals always whine when they get caught, Driftglass.
They do, don't they? They really do. First they brag about you'll never hold me, and yes, charges ain't gonna stick. And then they get really panicky, and they piss themselves, and they go to jail.
It just reminds me of the Shingles Don't Care or Shingles Doesn't Care commercials.
Yeah.
Like, the Department of Justice doesn't care.
They don't care. They don't care. And you know what? Nobody's door got kicked in. Hal Sparks did a whole, 17-hour minute-by-minute breakdown of these things, which I'm going to do one day for the Bulwark podcast. We'll get to that later, but I will break
that
down.
You're going to do that without me editing any of it.
Sure. That's the bonus content. That's the bonus Patreon content
yeah. that people are wanting. Yeah. Hey, thank you to all of our new Patreons.
Yeah, man.
Join Holy us crap. At Patreon. What a party it is over there. And we'd love to have you join us. We are trying to add 300 new Patreons before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And we're at like 50, I think, getting close to 50 new Patreons. So that is wow. so awesome. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Driftglass, we're going to do a little time machine thing today to start off with reminding people, as you said, how long we've been at this.
Uh-huh.
What's changed? What will never change?
Right.
Right. So take it away.
Well, yeah, I think we're going to start out being a little bit science fiction-y because we're going to go in the time machine and we're going to go back 10 years, a full decade, to the middle of September 2012 when I had to be off the grid for a little while, but I still managed to post to my blog and we still managed to get an episode out every week of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess why I had to be off the grid for a while and had to go over to the Heartland Cafe, the sadly defunct Heartland Cafe, to post to my blog? Any guesses?
Well, I know this because you told me.
Yes, I did.
But I did not realize that this is how long it had been or how short it had been. You had turned off your internet in the castle in Chicago because you were moving down here.
I had. I had and
we
I did.
We spent the first 8 or 9, 10 months of our marriage, you commuting back and forth to Chicago.
Absolutely. And that's because I had a job up there. I had a job at the Safer Foundation, getting ex-offenders jobs. I liked the job. It was good work. It's a very screwed up place to work. And the grant ran out and they went in a 24-hour period to, we're trying really hard to hire you, but the hiring practice here takes weeks because it involves multiple levels of security clearance up to and including the FBI to, you know what? We're going to go in a different direction. We're not going to do that. The grant ran out. We're sorry. So another rug was sort of pulled out from under me. But, I had plans anyway, and that's why I moved to Springfield. That's when and why. So,
and we didn't have to meet you at the train in pajamas anymore. The little girls, the daughters wanted to meet you, and so it was bedtime.
That was always fun. That was always fun.
When you rode in on the train, and so we just came in our pajamas to the train station and got you. And it was a hard time, but a good time.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? When I moved to Chicago, like 27 years before that, was the last Chicago teacher's strike that I remember.
Mm.
And the week that you and I piled into a truck and brought my last of my belongings down here was the first teacher's strike in 27 years. You know what? I personally take responsibility for holding the strike at bay for, quarter of a century. But, as I said in my blog, you want to screw with me now? Go ahead. Try it. Go ahead and try it.
Well, So you've been thinking about the past decade in politics.
I have. And, by the way, I do have photos of the interior of the castle if anyone wants me to post those one of these days. what the Driftglass Castle Driftglass looked like in Chicago from the inside. So if you're interested in seeing pictures of those old days, let me know. But yeah, 10 years ago this week, I thought it might be helpful and healthy and fun to do a quick take on what the political and media environment was, what it looked like. Because in 2012, the presidential election was 2 months away. The Lincoln Project, I know it's shocking, did not exist. Didn't come into existence at all then. Instead, Rick Wilson was busy being Rick Wilson on Twitter, saying things like, Jonathan Chait takes time out from making dolls from Obama's hair and pens this ode to Barack's greatness. And by ode, I mean tripe. He was just an asshole. Always was an asshole. Always will be an asshole. And he also put up the Federalist Society's, or the Federalist newsletter, Ben Dominick's piece of trash. He loved it back then. Posted the Federalist's hot take on Clint Eastwood's empty chair speech.
Eastwood's
empty chair speech? Yeah, they loved it. They thought it was great. They were celebrating the sort of the wicked genius of it.
I remember the look on Paul Ryan's face during that speech.
Yeah.
And how utterly embarrassed he was.
The we're going to lose, aren't we, Mitt?
Yes, we're going to lose.
And kind of badly. The Bulwark did not exist yet. But the Bulwark at that time was called the Weekly Standard. And
yeah, you could put it that way.
They took all the same people. They got a couple of millionaires to front them a couple of $1 million to start up a thing after the Weekly Standard went to shit. Instead, Charlie Sykes was busy being the Rush Limbaugh of Wisconsin on the radio. And he was peppering Twitter with his hot takes, including, but not limited to, the Libya debacle, the top five worst Obamacare taxes coming in 2013. And then he was retweeting a lot from Powerline, which was a white supremacist site that he retweeted all the time. Because back then, man, we're all on team Obama's a monster and a communist and try to destroy us all. And Republicans are great, right? 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 And the article was entitled, "This is a tough one. The Obama administration, complete disaster or total catastrophe?" Because that's how they talked all the fucking time. Warning that the media is ignoring independent swing towards Romney.
Oh, yeah. Romney was going to win in a landslide.
Oh, yeah. Then there was Democratic voter fraud. A daughter of a New Berlin nursing home resident raised concerns that her mother was registered to vote twice. So that was the extent of it.
That was headline news.
Huge scandal.
Powerline. Yeah.
Don't forget Obama phones. Obama phones everywhere, which were, you know, Bush phones and Reagan phones, etc. But it was Obama because the word that Charlie Sykes loved to pound fucking home all the time until he found Jesus and got kicked out of the party was moochers, Democratic moochers, welfare moochers. And man, he loved that word. He reported, according to John McCain, Benghazi, worse than Watergate. Guess what? No, it wasn't. But, you know, you do you, man. And after Obama won, right out of the box, the question was, how many businesses have announced closings or layoffs since Obama won a second term? Because, you know, Democrats always do this shit like that. The crooked media lads, the Pod Save America lads, that whole empire did not exist. The 170 employees they have were not employed by them. Instead, those guys were writing speeches and jokes for Barack Obama in the White House. Podcasting was relatively new. And we were pretty much the only liberal podcast within 1,000 miles in any direction. And we were definitely the only one not based in Washington, D.C., New York, or Los Angeles. And these were the things that you and I were talking about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Our recorded live thing. Recorded live from the Mitt Romney tax return email wait list. Anybody remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. And our episode was entitled Learning from Willard's Libya Lies. Because Libya and lying and Mitt Romney were all about it. The National Review, ever heard of them? Had already booked their Romney's probably doomed, so let's get on a boat and stay drunk for a week cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Featuring, and I used to describe this as what, the fourth circle of hell? The fifth circle of hell?
Dante's fifth circle of hell.
Cruise. This cruise featured Scott Rasmussen, Rich Lowry, Jonah Goldberg, Catherine Jean Lopez. Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
And Cal Thomas. So who doesn't want to get on a boat and stay drunk with those people a week after?
Well, and that was when I knew, because this was September of 2012. Yeah. They were announcing that in December they were going to go on a cruise toward, you know, through the Caribbean, right? I think it was a Caribbean cruise off of Miami or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And here were all these people that I thought were going to be part of the Romney transition team.
Nope.
They knew the writing on the wall.
Oh, the stank was on the wall.
Yeah.
There was a guy named Mark Halperin. I don't know if you remember him, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Used to have a TV show. He's on Newsmax now.
He is. But at that time, he was on a show called Hardball, which also doesn't exist anymore. Both sidesing the shit out of everything like a man possessed. You're right. He's since been banished from respectable TV for being a creepy sexual weirdo and pervert and harasser, and is now a regular on Newsmax, where he continues both sidesing like a man possessed. He also is, and I'm not kidding, I mentioned this last week, the notary public for the no labels both sides scam, which I have come to suspect has something to do with some friend of his on the inside making sure that Halperin gets to continue his medical and dental coverage. Give him a job, any fucking job, notary, fine. We'll make him a fucking notary, and then he'll have a dental and medical package, and he'll get off my back because he's unemployable at this point. I don't care how many times Mika and Joe Scarborough try to haul him back into the light, he's gone. And until the next, you know, crazy Republican gets into office. But now back then, there was a program called Meet the Press. You might have heard of it. It was being hosted by a god-awful hack named David Gregory. But he was replaced by this new kid, Chuck Todd, later. And, you know, that Chuck Todd kid, who knows, it might be even better. It turned out not to be. But 10 years ago, he spent most of the hour of Meet the Press fulfilling his corporate function of laying down for Team Romney. And I mean laying down like a bear rug. It was embarrassing. It was predictable. And here's what I wrote on my blog at the time. Excuse me. Half of Gregor's interview was spent on Mitt and Ann's campaign bus with Mitt's arm half around Romney asking giggly, open-ended, fluffy questions. Gregor spent the other half of the interview in a big comfy white chair on the roof of the Romney's campaign headquarters tossing Mitt softballs, nothing on taxes, one question on abortion, that was it, which Romney deflected with big wads of pre-chewed talking points. I'm as conservative as the Constitution, for which Gregory had no substantive follow-up questions of any kind because Meet the Press doesn't do those anymore. It would be wrong to say that David Gregory is an embarrassment to his profession. It would, however, be perfectly accurate and true to say that David Gregory's profession is a disaster for democracy and an embarrassment to real journalism. It would also be accurate and true to say that the status quo will never change until an unholy amount of pain is visited on the corporate decision makers who continue to abet conservative lies and fob establishmentarian testicle cozies like David Gregory off on the public as real journalists. Does any of this sound familiar? Also, 10 years ago, under the heading of Stupid Shit Centrists Say, we were forwarded a little clip from a tech site called Read Write Web, entitled Three Ways Social Media is Reshaping the Political Landscape. This, rereading this, made me laugh out loud.
Mm-hmm.
The recent political conventions, plural, underscored a few disconcerting trends. Our political leadership is not only out of touch with reality, but also tends to distort the truth. How can social media-based innovations address these challenges? Facebook and Twitter will save us, people. They're going to save us from the liars on both sides. Rereading this shit from 10 years ago is weirdly depressing and kind of reassuring and does help me at least mentally separate, because we do this every week, what is eternal and unchanging and depressingly constant and what is transient. So what we were talking about 10 years ago, how poorly the media serves our democracy, what a complete disaster Meet the Press is, how the disease of both-siderism is apparently indestructible, and how liberal voices are still persona non grata in the public square. And none of that has changed. Ample evidence everywhere, anywhere you care to look, that this is terrible. And anyone with any authority should be changing it immediately. This is all lights are blinking red. And yet, the people in charge of putting bodies in front of cameras and running Republican campaigns see no reason to change their incestuous relationship and keep voices like ours, not you and me specifically, but voices like ours, the hell away from the public square, because we tend to bring things up like, hey, wasn't this shit you were doing 10 years ago exactly the same shit you're doing now, and you keep expecting Republicans to get better, and they never will, because the shit you do is why they are the way they are. Anyway, welcome to 10 years ago.
welcome to 10 years ago. And I think that if I had asked you 10 years ago to predict what would be happening or what we would be podcasting about or what might be on our list of podcast topics 10 years from today.
Right.
10 years ago. I don't think you would have come up with, well, Andrea Mitchell will be interviewing George Will about how electric cars are bad for President Joe Biden.
No, Andrea. And they're both like, you know, if people would just buy a goddamn horse, all these problems would go away. Buy a horse, for God's sakes. This whole Fliver thing, these Model Ts, it's goddamn fad. These crazy kids are going to get themselves killed in that Model T, and the fad will phase and it changes.
And if it's got a radio in it, God forbid.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But yeah, I think it's, you know, there just is no thing, no such thing as retirement.
No.
In the media.
Nope.
And in the Senate and in apparently in the White House. And I've talked about this many, many times. I wrote about this 10 years ago. I wrote about this 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That, you know, we've had for a long time the oldest Senate in the history of the United States.
Yes, we have.
And, you know, that is changing slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if 85-year-old Andrea Mitchell will still be around 10 years from now interviewing 91-year-old George Will.
117-year-old George Will.
No, no. He's 81.
Yeah.
So he's a couple years older than the president, okay?
Right.
And part of this, as I said then, is that baby boomers want the president of the United States to be older than them.
Yes, they do.
Because that's if the president's older than me, then I'm not old.
Well, let's be clear. Older, white, and male.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's be very clear about that, because we had a younger black president, and that's what caused the Republican Party to finally lose its mind completely.
And, I do think that age had, you know, 20% of the problem that the Tea Party had with Obama. 20%.
Yeah.
Was that he was younger than they were.
Well, yeah. He was everything they weren't. He was intelligent. Yeah. He was well-educated. Educated, he was well-spoken. Yeah. He was athletic. He had a hot wife and lovely kids. And was seemed like a genuinely decent guy, and he was black. Yeah. All
and
of which they
first
hate.
Marriage.
Yeah.
Yes.
All
right.
Of which they hate. And freaked out over. But then the next person up in line was a woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was of that age cohort, and she was white, but she was a lady, and we can't have that. So off we go.
Yep. But it has been quite a week, Driftglass.
We
started off talking about, you know, taking away Mike Pillow's phone. But what about Boris Epstein's phone?
I know.
And this, someone reminded me that this kind of started with Alex Jones's phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of the data in the phone being given to the opposing attorney in the Sandy Hook case, who was then happy to provide it to the January 6th committee, who's happy to provide it to the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
And whatever is on Alex Jones's phone can then be used as evidence in a search warrant to go after MyPillow or Boris Epstein or Steve Bannon, because all of the texts going back and forth is under the category of conspiracy.
Right. That was the day 10,000 sphincters just went.
No, but 10,000 bowels did not. And this is what makes me wonder. I mean, Mike Lindell was on with the Lindell TV guy, you know, because he's got his own YouTube channel where he can go and talk anytime he wants.
Sure.
And he's sitting there talking about Dominion voting machines. I talked about this last week. It is time to stop airing. And I know Hal Sparks does a lot with Mike Lindell and points out how ridiculous his election theories are and so forth. Mike Lindell is mentally ill.
Yes, he is. Clearly he is.
Clearly has mental problems. Mm-hmm. And I'm not diagnosing him in any way. I'm simply listening to the way he talks. And he has no one in his life to tell him, even an attorney to tell him, shut up.
Right. Wrestle him to the ground. And
the
say,
words, the word dominion should not come out of your mouth unless you're praying about the angels in heaven.
Right. That's right.
That's it.
Yep.
And you are hurting yourself every time you talk about voting machines.
Well,
you're harming yourself legally.
you know, that's the thing. This is symptomatic of addiction.
Yeah.
Around the next corner is where you'll find the thing that will make you feel the way you should.
Right.
You know, everything will be resolved tomorrow. Yep. If I can just get through today, if I can just get around the corner, if I can just get one more thing, tomorrow it'll all work itself out.
And everything's a sign that that's going to happen. Everything that happens to me today is a sign that tomorrow I'm going to have everything I want. That's gambling addiction, right? You know, if the number 17 appears in the news, Driftglass, that's the 17th letter of the alphabet. If you ever see the number of the 17 anywhere, that's a sign that the right people are in charge.
Look, there's a 30-1 underdog called Mike's Phone running today at the aqueduct. Let's put all our money on it. I was thinking that Boris Epstein's phone might be a problem for the FBI because it uses voice recognition and no human.
Boris Epstein at all.
And you knew it was bad over there. You knew when they were just running out of warm bodies to throw in front of the camera, when Boris Epstein was on camera on Sinclair Broadcasting.
Right. Doing editorials.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
And it's like, Robert Shaw's fingernails on the chalkboard. It's like, oh, God, why is this? I mean, I understand that you have Laura Ingraham and Mark Levin, who have all the comforting, dulcet tones of a dentist drill and an oil drum. Okay, I got that. But Boris Epstein is simply incomprehensible. You can't understand what he's saying. So there's a lot of make work you can put this stooge to work doing. But in front of the camera, it just seems like they've run out of executives to do anything other than throw darts at boards and, run a Ouija board. Say, oh, I guess it's Boris's turn. Anyway.
I wanted to talk for a minute about Republican candidates, because we had one today from New Hampshire who actually flipped on the air on Fox and said Joe Biden is president.
Oh, no.
We didn't want it to be that way. And yes, there was some corruption, and it's important that we root that out. But we have to admit, I've looked at all the data, and Joe Biden is the legitimate president of the United States. And the Fox host is like, what? You've been telling us for how many months, how many years that this election was stolen? And now you're saying, no, I've looked at the data. I've looked at the data, and actually, Joe Biden won. And we have to move on.
Yeah.
Now, this is September of 2022.
Right.
8 weeks before the midterms. Less than
little,
8 weeks before the midterms.
A little slow on the homework front, but yeah.
Well, but this is where they are. They have a choice between leaning hard on the right-wing noise machine that motivates their donors and their base, or listening to the pollsters who are telling him, you just can't keep doing this because you're going to lose if you do this.
Well, and there's a whole, I think, just a checklist of things here are the talking points we want you to agree with. And it used to be you could get away with 80%.
Yep.
And then it was 90%. And now it's nope, got to be fully on board with everything, the crazy,
with MAGA,
the right,
MAGA,
everything.
MAGA, which is Trump is the legitimate president and the number 17 is magic.
And that's how fascism works. Fence straddlers who want to be in a little foot in both camps, I'm a Romney Republican, I'm a conservative, this and that. No, eventually they will demand utter loyalty, complete loyalty.
Well,
and that moment has come.
This is where I look at Mary Petrola. She's the new congresswoman from Alaska.
From Alaska,
won a special election. She beat Sarah Palin. She was sworn in this week. Nancy Pelosi held a baby, and was grandma, while this new congresswoman and her family are in Washington from Alaska getting sworn in today. Now, this happened, I think she got sworn in on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I get a fundraising text message from Mary Petrola, ostensibly from, it's all DSCC, okay? It's all Democratic Senate camp or Congressional Campaign Committee, but comes from this new congresswoman.
You might have to do that. It's Peltola, not Petrola.
Peltola. Thank you. I didn't write it down right.
Peltola.
Thank you. I got a text from her it's, hi, this is the new. And the way she put it was, I am Alaska's first pro-choice congresswoman in 40 years. That was how she introduced herself to small Democratic donor me. Okay.
$5
Democratic donor
me.
Right.
Yeah.
And Jeff Ettinger, who is running in Minnesota, is running in the general election. He lost in a special election 51-47. He expects the turnout in the general election to be three times what it was in the August special election. Mm-hmm. So we did postcards to voters for Jeff Ettinger in July, and we're mm-hmm. doing them now in September. And we're just, it's just keep swimming, keep swimming, keep swimming. Whereas Sarah Palin is out there giving interviews about ranked choice voting.
Yeah. Yeah.
While her opponent just got sworn into the House. And Sarah Palin's on the ballot in November.
They live on
different
planets.
She can't let it go that she lost. That well, she has to legislate and litigate that election. Now she's you know, Sarah Palin's a special case anyway, but it seems to me that Democrats, first of all, introducing yourself as pro-choice in a text to Democrats, that's it, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Lindsey Graham decides to go full Leroy Jenkins on the abortion issue this week.
Uh-huh.
Just as Republican Senate candidates like Blake Masters in Arizona are scrubbing their websites of their stand on abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the hell is Lindsey Graham doing here? I don't understand this at all, except that he feels that that his base is losing interest in voting this time.
Well, may I read you a quick something?
Sure.
I wrote this on the anniversary of 9/11 in 2009.
Okay.
So we're beyond the time machine period.
Right.
Okay. And in a post I wrote called Like a Virgin, which made some ripples, mm-hmm. but see if this sync this up with exactly what you just said. I'm going mm-hmm. halfway down the post. That brutal meth addict level of dependence on never being brought to book for anything they say or do left the right completely unprepared for the one thing their leaders promised them would never happen again, losing.
Mm-hmm.
And losing has driven them a special kind of crazy. At screaming, incoherently lashing out in every direction, kind of cold turkey junkie withdrawal crazy. In a few short months since they lost, they have emptied out their entire store of raving invective and delusion. Losing has left them insisting that the legally elected president of the United States somehow isn't really the president. He's a secret commie, a communist, a Hitler, a Muslim sleeper cell, a Chicago gangster. That's how they were 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because they lost. They lost and they couldn't bear it. It was insane. And we're going to talk about Ken Starr in a little bit, but Ken Starr was the first barrel bomb they dropped into this mm-hmm. political arena. It was like,
correct.
No, Clinton can't be president. He can't be president because he's liberals and liberals are monsters. We can't permit that. Just ask Newt Gingrich or Rush Limbaugh. And so Ken Starr deciding that, fuck it. We're just going to keep prosecuting and prosecuting and prosecuting and finding nothing to destroy a reputation, to cripple mm-hmm. the president. Mm-hmm. That is like, oh, that's a proof of concept.
Right.
This works. And ever since then, actually well before then, losing has been the worst thing ever because they truly believe that you and I, Blue Gal, are worse than Hitler.
Right, right.
Our motives are always suspect.
We're satanic. Well, yeah. we eat babies and drink baby blood to stay young and
yep.
right, whatever. Yeah.
And well, this week on CNN, if I may. One of the people who's been involved in this tradecraft, this lying tradecraft, named Alice Stewart.
She's been around for a long time.
For decades. She has been a professional GOP bullshit liar for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on this week with Al Franken on CNN. Mm-hmm. And she decided it'd be fun to lie about the Supreme Court and how the GOP isn't doing anything wrong. There's plenty of historic precedent for what they did. And Al Franken just destroyed her.
Mm-hmm.
She was lying about how the GOP had stacked and stolen the court, and Al Franken leveled her to the point where she was reduced to stammering and grabbing for talking points and just gibbering and making no sense at all.
And he asked her a very simple question because she said, this has happened before. This
precedent.
Holding off on a Supreme Court nominee like they did with Merrick Garland. This is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And he just asked her, when has it happened before? And she said, well, I can't tell you
an exact date.
It's because it's never happened before.
Yeah. And she's flailing around and she's throwing mm-hmm. Joe Biden's name in the hat and she's talking. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he keeps he keeps doing what a journalist would have done if we had journalists anymore, which is asking her a very simple question. You made an assertion that there's precedent for what Mitch McConnell did and the theft of these – and these three justices who just lied their way out of the court, including one, Amy Coney Barrett, who was appointed like 4 minutes before Biden took
office. Before the election. Yeah.
Before the election. So what is the precedent you're citing? Well, I don't know. Well, you just said it happened in history. When? When exactly? Well, Joe Biden, corruption, Solyndra. No. I don't want to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop. You just said a thing. Prove what you just said. Now, what do we learn from this? Alice Stewart is a liar and a fraud and a hack and should never be allowed on television. Number two, her completely jaw-dropping collapse should be career-ending. And number three, this will not affect her career at all.
Mm-hmm.
Any more than being a serial liar and constantly wrong has put a dent in Bret Stephens' career at the New York Times, or Mark Thiessen at the Washington Post, or Hugh Hewitt at the Washington Post. These people are part of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
They're cogs. They're not passing through the machine. They are the machine. And until that machine is destroyed, this is never going to change. The one thing you learn from having archives that go back 17 years is that it just keeps happening over and over again. The same assholes show up. They tell the same lies for the same monsters, and they keep getting away with it. And they're getting away with it again. Now, we do have a little more ammunition on our side this time, but goddamn.
Well, and if there were something other than a cog in the machine, Lindsey Graham wouldn't be a senator anymore.
No.
And no one in his party would support him doing what he did.
Of course not.
Yeah. This week, we have talked recently, Driftglass, about how the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago meant that Donald Trump's lie event horizon had shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
And that it used to be in 2 weeks, I will have a healthcare plan. In 2 weeks, I will have a wall plan. In 2 weeks. And the mainstream media and the White House press corps always focused on what happened today and what's trending on Twitter and what is going to get me a promotion. Fat and happy in the White House press corps. They don't ask, well, 3 weeks ago, you said you were going to have a healthcare plan in 2 weeks. They don't follow up on that. They don't mark their calendars to check back with him. And what happened when the FBI searched and found classified records at Mar-a-Lago is that broke that cycle, because this crime is so severe that, you know, Donald Trump making up lies over and over again and changing the story, he couldn't say, I'll tell you whether they were classified or not in 2 weeks. that doesn't work. These are court cases that are going through. These are grand juries that are meeting, and they're not on a 2 week. You get to control the timeline.
Right.
And so now Joe Biden is doing the converse of that. And I want to talk about this for a minute, because Joe Biden believes in competent government. The Democratic Party believes in that competent government is how you address and fix problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the right, and I mean this in terms of the media and in terms of elected officials, cannot keep up with Joe Biden's willingness and ability to simply solve problems. And having a competent staff in the White House, having competent cabinet members, Marty Walsh and Pete Buttigieg resolved the labor strike in the railway system this week with competence, acting in good faith as government officials, but clearly being on the side of the labor union that had been without a contract for 3 years. And was looking for the benefits of sick days in their contract. That was one of the arguing points, was sick days. And, you know, I mean, this going without a contract thing happened during the Trump administration.
Yes. Well, you know, here's the thing, Blue Guy. You got to realize giving them sick days will cause inflation. Even worse.
Anyway, here is, you know, Marty Walsh is 100% pro-labor. Pete Buttigieg, transportation secretary, knows how important this vector is to our economy. Joe Biden is Mr. Amtrak.
And getting more so.
Yeah.
I mean, this rail is not an antique technology that's going away tomorrow. It's actually getting more and more important.
It is the backbone of, as Joe Biden said this morning, it is the backbone of our economy. It is how we get natural gas. We don't put natural gas on airplanes and fly it across the country. It is how we get fuel to other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so the right can't keep up with Joe Biden's ability to fix problems as president. And he's absolutely willing to use the power of the Democratic Congress to appropriate money, find money in the budget to pay people to do things. And mm-hmm. he stuck to his guns for labor.
Yes, he did. He did.
Put his finger on the scale of labor, fixed the rail strike. Before Eric Erickson could delete his tweet blaming him for the strike.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would refer you to what you may have forgotten about, the baby formula crisis, which was going to be 6 months of blaming Obama, blaming Biden.
It was
going to be 6 months on Fox of blaming Biden for starving babies.
It was Obama. I'll just keep saying Obama because it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
It's Biden Katrina, you know, which I always appreciate them bringing up an actual clusterfuck by the previous Republican president.
Yeah.
Compared to the non-existent thing they're making up that is happening right now and never actually turns out to be that big a deal. It was important when it was there, but it was not that Joe Biden was busy appointing his Arabian horse buddy as the guy in charge of baby formula. It was
it was
a pandemic thing that had massive knock-on effects. Or deciding
that baby formula supplies that the federal government owned were only going to go to red states.
Right, which is...
Because blue state babies, this is our supply.
Right. That's Donald Trump and ventilators, people. Yes, remember that.
It is.
Jared Kushner's, you know, policy was dole it out to your friends, let the other ones die.
Right, right. So, especially in New York City, which is weird. Because that's where Jared Kushner lived.
Yeah, well...
Not anymore. They won't let him back. All right. So let's talk about, we know there's a lot of books out there, Driftglass.
We do.
A lot of them are talking about, you know, the collapse of the Republican Party over the past, five or six years.
I've written conservatively 1,000 posts. No, not quite that many, but hundreds of posts going, listen carefully. Remember how I taught you to listen carefully for the words, both sides do it.
Yeah.
And many people, and this is not just me, but, you know, a bunch of liberals like us, listen carefully. You will hear it everywhere. It's the forever chemical. It's microplastics. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And once you start hearing it, you start noticing that people who say this shit are cowards or liars or con men or Republicans or members of the media or all of the above. But it's always a deflection. It's always a lie. It's always something that you don't want to talk about. The same was true for 5 to 6 years ago. Because, man, that was the fucking mantra for every Never Trumper and all of their friends in the media. Everything started 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't us. Wasn't, you know, 30, 40 years of Republican behavior leading up to Trump. That had nothing to do with anything. It was 5 or 6 years ago. And suddenly overnight. And now there have been a spate of books which say, no, you know what? Here's the thing. It didn't start in 2018 or 17 mm-hmm. or 16 or 15. It started pretty much with Gingrich and Limbaugh in the 80s and 90s. And even before then, there was a long, long, long track down which the Republican Party went, could have gotten off any time, could have denounced and denied, could have said we're going to live differently, but they didn't. They chose every step along the way. They chose to pander to the worst people in the world. And one of those authors is named David Corn. And David Corn has been reporting for Mother Jones, I think, or for The Nation, or maybe both.
Yeah,
for a long time. He's reliable. You know, he's a good voice and he's a reliable voice and he can't break through anywhere but MSNBC usually. And so he has a book that is one of five or six, I lost count. They're saying, nope, it was the last 30 years and then some. So he got himself on the Bulwark podcast with Charlie Sykes. And Charlie Sykes is, you know, the Rush Limbaugh of Wisconsin for 30 years. And David Corn made a point of repeating the phrase, for the last 70 years, like 9 times in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it is one of those podcasts that I actually recommended to people because it's one of those things I'm really tempted to do like a Hal Sparks breakdown because Charlie Sykes was integral to the growth of the Republican Party into the monster it became. He was cool with it every step along the way until it spit him out. And then he came to Jesus, and it all started just last month, right? And all of the people that he works with, pretty much without exception, Stuart Stevens is a little bit different, but right across the line, they don't like talking about the period before 2016. They really hate it. They will hang up on you. They will block you for mentioning that shit. But apparently there's enough of a wave building to actually talk about this stuff that he's on the show. And the best that Charlie Sykes could muster is that he miscalculated. Mm-hmm. I miscalculated the number of crazy people in the Republican Party. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You fed them. You fed them red meat every day. They're the ones who put the roof over your head. And you won't say that out loud, because once you say that out loud, then it turns out liberals are right and you were wrong. And then it turns out, why are we listening to Charlie Sykes again? Whole bunch of people over there who don't get any attention, any money, any funding, anything, who are actually right. Why are we putting Charlie fucking Sykes on television every goddamn day? Mm-hmm. But and then he came back with, like, well, you know, but Mitt Romney, a good Republican. What about Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney is a great guy. What about Mitt? Mitt is a old school. And David Corn very politely just took him apart and said, yeah, but Mitt Romney literally hugged Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Literally threw in with the king of the birthers. Literally hugged him, put in with him, knew this was his base. And Charlie Sykes says, oh, yeah, that's right. Yep. Oh, yeah. I forgot that part. I forgot the part where you can't get elected in Republican politics during your entire life without pandering to the base that you all goddamn well knew was there. And you all goddamn knew was getting crazier by the minute. And since you can't win elections without them, and since winning elections to defeat the evil liberals is more important than anything, you just kept feeding them raw meat. Because you thought exactly what the housing bubble assholes thought. IBG, YBG. I'll be gone, you'll be gone. When this shit hits the fan, if it ever does, I'll be retired. It won't matter. I'll be dead in my grave. It'll be 50 years from now. It won't bother me. I'll have gotten mine and gotten out. And then it happened during your lifetime, while you were, you know, upright and walking this earth. And then you have to start making up fairy tales about how it wasn't you, you didn't know. Who knew it was there? And every time they do that, I just point to my archives and your archives and Crooks and Liars archives. It's a whole bunch of people who told you this was happening. And you called us crazy and stupid and crackpots and nuts. You and everybody else in the goddamn media. And we told you what both sidesism was doing, both siderism was doing. We told you that it was empowering the worst people, and he kept doing it. And I'm glad that he was invited. I'm glad that David Corn got a chance to sell his book. I'm glad that Charlie Sykes had the guts to put him on the air, but it's still that squirming kind of, it wasn't me and I didn't know and I wasn't there and this is all news to me. And what about this nice guy? What about that nice guy? And what about Bill Buckley? Well, yeah, Bill Buckley did throw him out of the party and then he invited him right back in the side door, didn't he? Oh, yeah, he did that, didn't he? So this whole mythology that they built for themselves about them being the noble moral ones, which was all bullshit always, is what's really under attack. It's their self-image of themselves as the good guys who were just misled or miscalculated. That's what's under attack. And they can't bear the idea that their life was a lie. So,
Driftglass, there were a couple of things that came out this week. First of all, the gradual and slow, gentle fading of the Durham probe into nothingness.
Oh, no. I was looking forward to a new season. Dragons and shit.
There were lots of other people.
Yeah.
The Fox Fuel Durham probe, Matthew Gertz tweets, the Fox Fuel Durham probe is ending with a whimper. It was supposed to put everyone from Barack Obama to Hillary Clinton in handcuffs. But Sean Hannity's conspiracy theories don't play well in court.
No, they don't.
And I said, Sean Hannity's conspiracy theories don't play well in court. Alex Jones' conspiracy theories don't play well in court. Donald Trump's conspiracy theories don't play well in court. Yeah, at long last, can we acknowledge that Republicans are not entitled to their own facts? But the fact is, none of those people care what happens in court, because the court that they're arguing in is the MAGA court of Fox viewers. And they win.
Always. Always.
Yeah.
And if the courts are the problem, they have the solution, which is pack the courts.
Pack the courts
with crazy people. Pack the courts with lunatics. Pack the courts with 12-year-olds. And then
pick your judge. Shop your judge.
Right.
Yep. We're going to go on to a news roundup, Driftglass.
That's a good idea, Blue Gal. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. This week, Joe Biden approved the first $900 million in U.S. funding to build 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations in 35 states. And boy, did he have fun at the Detroit Auto Show.
Yes, he did. Yes,
driving around an electric Cadillac.
Mm-hmm. Man, there's a song there somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe Johnny Cash could have one volt at a time or something like that. This week, Joe Biden did politics on Twitter. So I'm sure somewhere some DC pundit peed their pants. Specifically, Rick Scott, who had been Peter Principled from the nation's biggest Medicare fraudster to the Republican senator who lost all the Republican Senate campaign's money, decided to be cute and to drop off his Rescue America plan at the White House so Joe could spread the word. And Joe did. Quote, couldn't agree more, Rick. And if anyone else wants to read your plan to put Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block, they should go to, and here's the website. Thanks for stopping by.
JoeBiden.com/Rick Scott's plan.
Yeah. Come on, man.
And that had been predicted in the Miami Herald. They said they didn't understand why the Democrats didn't just go publish this everywhere. Because Rick Scott wants to sunset Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm. But Rick Scott.
Oh, and tax retirees. Increase taxes on retirees because they don't have enough skin in the game.
You know, shooting your dick off is one thing. Shooting your dick off with a flare gun so that everyone sees it is entirely different. But okay, Rick, way to go, man.
Well, and who is Rick Scott talking to all day?
Yeah.
Well, he's not talking to seniors who are struggling to pay for prescription drugs. He's not talking to those people.
Can I share a theory with you, Blue Gal?
Yeah.
It's the only thing that explains everything Republicans are doing other than the fact that they're just awful, stupid, crazy, evil scumbags.
Yeah. Does this explain Lindsey Graham doing the abortion thing?
Explains everything. Years ago, they collectively signed a pact with Satan and to win power. And it's unbreakable. The only way their contract can be broken is if they lose an election, lose a lot of elections. So they are trying desperately to lose elections by embracing the craziest, dumbest, foulest, vilest, stupidest strategies imaginable. In a vain hope that if they lose enough elections, Satan will break their contract and they can go back to doing whatever they were doing before.
Hmm.
And it's not working because the Republican base are all on board with all the crazy, stupid, vile, evil shit. And they're learning, oh, shit.
We love Satan.
Yeah, we love Satan. We're totally pro-Satan. After you.
49% of Americans approve of Biden's job performance, his highest rating since April.
The House proposed bipartisan legislation to reform the Electoral Count Act of 1887. This is the first major legislative response to the January 6th Capitol attack. The bill, called the Electoral Count Reform and Presidential Transition Improvement Act, is similar to the bipartisan effort in the Senate to clarify the limited role of the vice president in certifying election results, raising the threshold for members of Congress to object to states' presidential electors, and promoting an orderly presidential transition. This is literally the least they could do when they've done the least they could do.
Pennsylvania State Representative Stephanie Borowitz put on a tight red dress and went and stood in front of a bunch of old white guys and bragged that she yelled at Moms Demand Action volunteers and said she wouldn't let them into her office. I always say God and guns got us here and God and guns will keep us here. Moms Demand, you're not getting anywhere in my office. Uh-huh. And all the white old guys clapped at her. There's a name for a job like that.
Yes, there is. And
I'm not going to say it.
Is it Lindsey Graham?
Yeah.
Because this week, Lindsey Graham, after swearing that we're never going to have a national abortion ban, introduced a bill to ban abortion nationwide. And Marco Rubio stepped right up to co-sponsor Lindsey Graham's bill, which is going nowhere. But it lets you know, please get us out of Satan's contract. Please. We're trying so hard to offend literally everyone and get enough women to the polls to drive us from office so we can go back and not burn in hell.
The governor of Georgia also was caught on a hot mic talking about, banning contraception in Georgia, contraception. We'll have to look at the legislation on that.
Yeah. Well, after you.
All right. This week, the right-wing Family Research Council announced that abortion is never medically necessary to save the life of a mother.
Yeah.
By the way, this is a monstrous lie.
Yes. This week, House Republicans introduced a bill giving pharmacists more power to deny Americans medication if they suspect it could be used to terminate a pregnancy.
A group of 22 Republican governors urged Joe Biden to withdraw his student loan forgiveness plan, claiming it will, quote, shift the burden of debt from the wealthy to lower income families. The Department of Education, however, estimates that nearly 90% of those benefiting from the student loan relief earn less than $75,000 a year, and that no individual making more than $125,000 or household making more than $250,000 will receive relief because it's forbidden in the plan for them to receive it.
This is where they get in trouble. They want to talk about the numeric value of a thing or the facts of a thing. Yeah. And it always kills them because they always get it wrong because they sit on a throne of lies.
Yeah.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott has apparently made human trafficking Texas official state policy.
Ron DeSantis as well has done the same thing. Newly released texts show that former Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant, Brett Favre, and others worked together to channel at least $5 million of the state's welfare funds to build a new volleyball stadium at the University of Southern Mississippi, where Favre's daughter plays the sport. Bryant has for years denied any close involvement in the steering of welfare funds to the volleyball stadium, though plans for the project even included naming the building after him. And Mississippi's current governor, Tate Reeves, abruptly fired the attorney bringing the state's case when he tried to subpoena documents related to the volleyball stadium, one text shows. The following text exchange between the nonprofit founder Nancy New and Brett Favre is damning. If you were to pay me, is there any way the media can find out where it came from and how much? He wrote in an August 2017 message. No, we have never had that information publicized, New said. The next day, she texted him with an update. Wow, just got off the phone with Phil Bryant. He is on board with us. We will get this done. And that's a hat tip to MississippiToday.org. Boots on the ground reporters who, by the way, are without clean water where they live, broke this story and found the texts and reported on it. And you need local people in journalism, folks.
You really do. I can't tell you how many times we lean on Capital Facts, Rich Miller's Capital Facts here in Illinois, because our actual state paper, the state capital paper, is garbage. More than 15,000 nurses in Minnesota went on strike after months of contract negotiations failed to produce a new deal that addresses massive understaffing and overwork.
The Justice Department issued about 40 subpoenas seeking information about Trump and his associates related to the 2020 election and the January 6th attack. They took Mike Pillow and Boris Epstein's phone.
Yes, they did. They did. It's very sad. It's big news. You know, we're still getting over it. That's why we're a little shaky this week, because they took their phones. From Brother Charlie Pierce, Wounded Knee is back where it belongs. The Oglala Sioux can now preserve the site of the massacre as a sacred place. And in local news, Republican candidate for Illinois governor and compulsive rake stepper, Darren Bailey, has rented space at the formerly called John Hancock Building, and we still call it John Hancock Building, in Chicago, so he can immerse himself in the culture of the city that he keeps calling a fucking hellhole. I will quote from Arch Pundit, who is a pundit person and a reporter and an observer of all things from down St. Louis way. What amazes me about Bailey's campaign is that the sheer amount of gaffes cannot be adequately covered. Mm-hmm. Every time I go to his Facebook page, I find some new gaffe. He is literally just running around the state taking pictures and has no political operation. He's freestyling. He's just making shit up as he goes along. It's the sort of the Mississippi River version of the National Review cruise. They know they're going to lose. And they know they're going to lose, as I said earlier in one of my posts this week, lose with Lar Daily numbers. Lard Daley was this crackpot who ran for mayor of Chicago twice and governor twice and president six times. And his candidacy was always America first. And he dressed like Uncle Sam. And it's going to be bad for Darren Bailey. And the post I wrote was entitled, do you think America's savviest pundits are still 100% sure that it was a bad idea for J.B. Pritzker to spend a little money to get Darren Bailey profile raised so that Illinois Republicans would vote him into office? Because it's looking like it was an act of political genius, because Bailey is just going to be a trivial pursuit question for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and a number of Chicagoans poked a lot of fun at him for pretending that moving into rented space at the John Hancock Building in Chicago would help him immerse himself in the culture of the city, because his office is above a cheesecake factory.
Yeah. Well, and so, here's the thing. People who lived in Chicago for a number of years remember when Jane Byrne moved into Cabrini Green. Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to get immersed in Chicago culture, move into Washington Park. By the way, Darren Bailey and his running mate tried to sort of glom onto a shooting in Washington Park and were destroyed by activists there.
Yeah.
And everybody who posted about it said, welcome to Chicago, Darren. Welcome to Chicago, Darren. Because that shit doesn't fly with people who actually live here and actually give a shit about the violence and want to do something about it.
Right.
You don't care about any of this shit. You care about blaming every problem in the universe on Democrats and Democrat governors and Governor Pritzker and your hillbilly yokel ass.
Your county wouldn't last 5 seconds without federal farm subsidies.
No. And so, your entire town, probably your county, wouldn't come to half a ward in Chicago, which has 50 wards.
No, they wouldn't.
Anyway.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties are Dexter and Lasagna. Lasagna? Lasagna has welcomed into his life a mini-me named Dexter. They are both orange tabbies. Dexter found his forever home during a Clear the Shelter weekend this past August. And there was a little grumbling the first few days between Dexter and Lasagna, but now they play together and sleep together. Dexter and his litter mates were found in the wild by a local trap-neuter release team. Luckily, Dexter was young enough to be socialized, and he has become a very sweet guy and good friend to Lasagna.
Aww.
And they are in their forever home.
Aww.
Of course, Dexter and Lasagna, seen here sleeping in a snuggle position, eat freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cats will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Dexter and Lasagna at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write to both of us also. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag jail to joy. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job, and we love doing this podcast. Thank you again to our new Patreons. Please join us over at Patreon. There's a Patreon link at our website, proleftpod.com. We are looking for new Patreon donors, and we appreciate your support. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Our PayPal, postal address information, that Patreon button, merch, it's all there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, please get someone else to listen to. And thank you for doing that.
Oh, one more thing, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
Which you can leave in or not. A lesson in how social media works. 2 years ago, I did a little post in a graphic showing Lindsey Graham as a member of The Handmaid's Tale. And it went pretty much nowhere. Most of my stuff, 10 people comment on it and a couple retweets and a couple likes. And that's fine. That's all you expect. And then Lindsey Graham decided to drop his abortion ban the same week that Handmaid's Tale dropped all of its new episodes on Hulu. And I posted exactly the same graphic with exactly the same heading. And last count, it had 3,000 retweets and likes and a whole bunch of 170 comments, which never happens to me. Which are two orders of magnitude more than anything ever.
Well,
ever.
You called him Of Donald.
Of Donald. That's right. On the original post, I called him Of Donald, too. And I thought, well, that's weird. And
it's not weird at all. The news just caught up with your Photoshop skills. It did. That's all.
And I used my newfound power and publicity to promote hashtag pro-choice dads.
Oh, good.
Look, if you like this, that's funny. And Lindsey Graham's a buffoon. But really, pro-choice dads using our graphics, our pro-choice dads graphics, to promote the idea that dads don't want the state telling their lovely and talented and smart and beloved daughters what to do with their goddamn bodies is a thing that is sort of under appreciated by a lot of campaigns out there. Yeah. And I think that
pro-choice campaigns should get on. And the ways the polls were swinging, the polls among dads swung really hard.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So,
hell yeah.
Toward the Democrats. Yeah.
You know, we are all about burying the boyfriend in the backyard if he crosses her.
It is so true.
And protecting her and raising her to be a intelligent, independent, beautiful person who can make her own goddamn decisions.
Thank you, Driftglass. How are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Galley, internet kitties would like to remind you that like internet kitties, mermaids come in many colors. Gosh.
Gosh.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2022, DGBG Productions Incorporated.